From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson, and this is On Point. At a White House meeting last week with grieving families and students from Parkland, Sandy Hook, and Columbine, President Trump floated the idea of arming teachers as a way to prevent another school tragedy. He repeated the idea Friday in a speech at CPAC.
The beauty is it's concealed. Nobody would ever see it unless they needed it. It's concealed. So this crazy man who walked in wouldn't even know who it is that has it. That's good. It's not bad. That's good. And a teacher would have shot the hell out of him before he knew what happened.
The idea isn't just on the chalkboard. In some parts of the country, teachers are coming to school with concealed weapons. But not all teachers are raising hands in support. This hour on Point, the debate over arming teachers. You can join us on air or online. Is this a good idea? Something to be taken seriously? Or does it create many more problems than it potentially solves? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Later this hour, we'll check in with two Marjorie Stoneham Douglas students. Classes are set to resume on Wednesday. But first, arming teachers as a way to stop or prevent school shootings. Joining me first from New York City is Lois Beckett, a senior reporter for The Guardian who covers gun policy. Lois, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you.
Great to talk to you, Jane.
So Congress is back in session today. The president is meeting with the nation's governors at the White House today. I'm sure this issue will be top of the list. Talk to us here. Are the battle lines pretty clear when it comes to arming America's teachers?
Yeah, this is a debate that we've had before, and what is so interesting 5 years, a little more than 5 years after Sandy Hook, is a suggestion that had prompted just total outrage and anger when Wayne LaPierre, the leader of the NRA, proposed it after the Newtown shooting, is now being talked about in the White House. This is now our national policy. So I think it's important to remember how far we've come on this and how seriously this issue is taken. But school security is always something that comes up after every school shooting, and it's something that, as one of the parents of the Parkland shooting victim said, you know, this is something that everyone can agree on, that kids should be safe. And so, you know, maybe we can spend a lot of money on bulletproof glass and armed guards, and that will make us feel better about the choices that we're making. That will make us think that our children are safe.
So during a speech on Friday at CPAC, the president claimed that 10-20% of American school teachers are, quote, very gun adept people. Meaning, I guess, that they already have background or training in weapons use. Lois, has the president given specifics about what exactly he proposes here?
No, and I don't know any data that would suggest what percentage of school teachers are ready to take on an armed intruder into their classroom. That does require a lot of hours of training, and so even your typical gun owner, which might be 20% or 30% of the American population, they're not necessarily going to have the level of training to effectively confront an armed intruder into their school or classroom. But you know, this is an idea that resonates very strongly with a lot of parents, with a lot of Americans, and in the parts of the country where people can concealed carry a handgun and are starting to do that on a daily basis. The idea that they can't do that in school, even though that's a place where they or their kids might be attacked, is frustrating. And so that's part of the motivation.
So is the president in a position to make policy changes on gun safety with regard to arming teachers, or is this really a congressional issue? And where does Congress stand generally on arming American teachers?
So this is something that after Sandy Hook, obviously Congress and Republicans in Congress totally balked at passing any gun control laws. But the idea of spending tens of millions of dollars to offer school safety grants to incentivize schools to take the safety measures they wanted, that was something that had bipartisan support. So it's very easy to imagine that once again, Congress will approve handing out millions and millions of dollars for schools to perhaps either hire security guards or do prevention programs to refuse to pass gun control legislation and hand out more dollars to say we want to make schools safe.
You mentioned the NRA's Wayne LaPierre and what he said 5 years ago after Sandy Hook, that American schools needed more, quote, good guys with guns. He said the same thing this week, as you mentioned, after the Parkland shootings. I'm curious how all of that plays against these high school students, these hundreds of social media savvy teenagers who are now organizing against the NRA and many against arming teachers.
I think the way that the gun debate has changed in the past couple of weeks is really extraordinary. And I have been covering this debate since shortly after Sandy Hook. And it seems to always follow the same patterns, and people get frustrated very quickly and give up. And the way that these students have come forward and the way that they're talking about this issue and the way that they're fighting is just totally different. They're not interested in compromise. They're not interested in saying, well, I'm sure we can find some middle ground here. They're saying, you have made this situation untenable. Our lives are at risk. We will not accept this. And we inaction is no longer an option. And so immediately you have seen a total different way of reacting by the NRA, by Republican politicians. They're offering up concessions that they never offered before. And so we've seen a lot of movement on this.
And on a side note, several American companies, including Delta Airlines, United Airlines, just a few days ago, ending their partnerships with the NRA. That's something new.
It absolutely is. And what's important here is that these were sort of discounts offered to NRA members. They were like a tiny perk of membership. Whether or not the NRA will lose any members over this, you know, I'm quite skeptical. But it's a shaming tactic. It is saying that the NRA and its members have made choices that make them unacceptable to the rest of society. And that is something that NRA members are bristling and saying, we're going to join the NRA. But it's a real and it's a powerful shift.
Here's Republican Florida Governor Rick Scott talking on Fox News Sunday. This was yesterday, saying he disagrees with President Trump's proposal to arm teachers.
I want our teachers to teach, and I want our law enforcement officers to be able to protect the students. I want each group to focus on what they're good at.
Lois, you've talked about how these young students from Parkland are way ahead of any politicians in how aggressive they want to be on gun control. Is that right?
That's absolutely true. And, you know, I think they are looking, and a lot of Americans are looking to the international context. So in Scotland in 1996, the Dunblane massacre, 16 primary school children were murdered in a school shooting. And England and the United Kingdom already had very strict gun control laws, and parents and survivors campaigned and to further restrict even civilian ownership of handguns. It was just immediate and sweeping action in a country that already had very tight gun control laws. And the American reaction for over the same amount of time since Columbine in 1999 has been the complete opposite, a refusal to restrict guns, efforts to make guns even more available. And the idea is, you know, we're going to put more guns in the hands of people all across America, and we will fortify and arm our schools and give kids bulletproof backpacks and bulletproof glass. And that's how we're going to handle the situation. And I have to say, in the eyes of the rest of the world, like, Americans are just crazy.
Lois Beckett from The Guardian. Hold on just a moment. Let me bring another voice here from Holladay, Texas. That's just southwest of Wichita Falls near the Oklahoma border. Kevin Dyes is on the line, superintendent of Holladay Independent Schools. The district permits licensed staff to carry guns at school. Kevin Dyes, welcome to On Point. How nice to have you.
Hi, Jane. Good to be with you.
So when did your district decide to allow licensed staff to carry guns at school?
The board adopted a policy in August of 2013, which would be CKC local, that provided for employees with concealed carry, you know, the people that are specified by the board who can carry on campus. But so that happened in August of 2013.
So how does the policy work? Who is allowed to carry a gun and who's not?
Well, and of course, that's not disclosed because that's a part of the program. And the board approves a resolution in closed session. Or the names on the resolutions, and comes out in open session and actually approves the resolutions. And so that's the way it works. We have a standard operating procedure. The members, the people who are who conceal carry on campus obviously have to have training. And I think it was just a reaction by the board and a desire to do everything that we could do to keep our students safe. We're an independent school district. Mm-hmm. Texas is very diverse. The United States is very diverse. And I think that there was community support for it at that time, that there's still community support for it. And that was really the reason. You know, our schools in Texas are governed by elected board members within an independent school district. And so it was something that our board felt like fit our community and fit our needs.
And so do you worry about accidents, Kevin Dyes? I mean, and what sort of policies do you have in place to prevent or to minimize the risk, I guess?
Well, and there's always a risk, obviously, yeah. If someone is handling a firearm. There's several things, And I wouldn't want to go into too much in depth, but obviously when you look at concealed carry law, just concealed carry law absent of schools, there's a lot of things in there in terms of who owns the firearm, who's responsible for the firearm, and so all of those things are carried through in our policy and are pretty pretty strict in terms of if you intentionally expose a firearm, say in a threatening way, that could certainly be a problem in terms of your employment with the school district. So it's pretty tight, and ultimately it's the employees or volunteers, and it's ultimately their responsibility in terms of safekeeping the firearm. Our standard operating procedure talks about the type of weapon, the type of holster, and even when it can be used. And so it's pretty specific.
And so do some teachers not want to participate? Do some teachers worry about being pressured to carry a gun? Some teachers just don't want to be involved at all?
I think the board is very thoughtful in terms of who carries and who doesn't, because obviously a teacher's number one concern should be teaching children and not having to worry about a firearm one way or the other. And so I think the board's thoughtful in terms of who they appoint to carry on campus. Mm-hmm.
And so do you think that this is a deterrent in your school district, Kevin Dyes? Have you had any incidents or any reason to?
No, we've never had an incident. Mm-hmm. Hopefully we never will. And we just see it as another part of a comprehensive plan to keep our students safe. At the time the policy was adopted, our facilities did not have controlled access. So we had some doors that were open, could be opened at any time. Mm-hmm. And you got to think our community is kind of like a Mayberry in a way. You know, that's maybe a little too idealistic, but so there wasn't necessarily a lot of threat, but our campuses were so open. Now, since we've had a building program and we've had controlled access, we have cameras in all our hallways, and so we're much better in terms of safety.
I'm Ophira Eisenberg. Join me on NPR's Ask Me Another as we challenge contestants and celebrities to nerdy word games, music parodies, and ponderful trivia. Find us every week on the NPR One app and wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're talking about the idea of arming teachers as a way to stop or deter school shootings. You can join the conversation. Is there a better way to prevent these school shootings? Should we be concerned about the racial overtones inherent in this debate? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. When President Trump met with state and local officials to talk about school safety on Thursday, he said we wouldn't have these mass shootings if the perpetrators knew people in the building were carrying firearms.
We have to harden our schools, not soften them up. A gun-free zone to a killer or somebody that wants to be a killer, that's like going in for the ice cream. That's like, here I am, take me. We have to get smart on gun-free zones. When they see it says, this is a gun-free zone, that means that nobody has a gun except them. Nobody's going to be shooting bullets in the other direction. And they see that as such a beautiful target. They live for gun-free zones.
And at the Conservative Political Action Conference on Thursday, National Rifle Association Executive Vice President and CEO Wayne LaPierre defended the idea of arming teachers and school employees.
Every day, young children are being dropped off at schools that are virtually wide open, soft targets for anyone bent on mass murder. It should not be easier for a madman to shoot up a school than a bank or a jewelry store or some Hollywood gala. Schools must be the most hardened targets in this country.
I'm speaking this hour with Lois Beckett, a senior reporter who covers gun policy for The Guardian, and with Kevin Dyes, the superintendent of Holiday Independent School District, which allows licensed staff to carry guns in schools. And joining me now from Portland, Oregon, is Suzanne Cohen, the president of the Portland Association of Teachers. She's also a middle school math and science teacher, and remarkably, a 1994 graduate of Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. Suzanne Cohen, welcome to On Point.
Hi, thank you.
So I know this shooting is obviously very personal for you. What's the last week and a half been like? What are your emotions?
Everything that you can imagine. I spent when I first found out initially in shock and really upset. But since then, I've really actually been very much inspired by the current students at Stoneman Douglas. And I feel it imperative as an educator to speak out in favor of gun control. We can no longer pretend that this isn't very much a factor for us as educators. When kids are afraid to come to school and parents are afraid to send their students to school, I think we have to take action. And so I have found myself learning as much as I can and really just starting to try to mobilize in a way that I haven't in the past.
So President Trump said the action that we need to take, in part, is to harden our schools, not soften them. You heard him say that just a moment ago. He's calling for having weapons-talented teachers, his quote, armed in schools to deter would-be shooters. Where do you stand on the idea of arming teachers, your peers, your colleagues in schools?
I'm completely opposed to it, but I'm really opposed to living somewhere where we just accept mass shootings. I don't know if Trump understands what a lockdown drill for an active shooter looks like at a school at every age level, what it's like for a teacher to hide her students in a closet. I didn't start my career this way. I started teaching in 2002, and we didn't have these drills. But now we practice it regularly, closing the shades, locking the doors, hiding our students, telling them to be quiet. And I want to see an end to that. I don't think we need to live in fear of mass shooters. And I'm interested in a solution that keeps us from hiding in closets.
So talk about the solution. You hear Kevin Dyes here, who's on the line. He's in Texas. He says their teachers have concealed weapons, that he thinks it's a deterrent. And there's Wayne LaPierre saying, you know, our schools are wide open, soft targets for anyone. And part of the solution is getting weapons in there so people know that you can't mess around with that school.
No, the solution is keeping the weapons out of the school so that no one has to live in fear of getting shot in school. Our students need to be safe in school, but our students also need to be safe in society. Our teenagers, when they're not in school, they go to movies, they go to concerts, they go to nightclubs. We need solutions that keep our kids safe everywhere.
Let's get some callers in here. I've got a lot of them waiting. Bill first in Akron, Ohio. Hi, Bill. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me on.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought I'd like to add my personal perspective. I teach in a community college in Akron.
Mm-hmm.
And the college situation is maybe a little different from the K-12 scenario in that maybe things are a little more relaxed. And I've had a little bit of experience as, you know, growing up shooting some long guns, but I would not consider myself trained. And that, I think, is my sticking point is I really have a lot of concern. Can I really be trained enough and achieve a level of hypervigilance that would really be appropriate to make me a protector of my students? Mm. I'd really rather see physical security improved and maybe putting professionals in schools that can protect the students rather than have me do it.
Bill, thank you. Let me get that point down here with our guests. Let's get Dave in here first from Charlotte, North Carolina. Hi, Dave. You're on the air.
Hi, Jane. How are you?
Good. I'm well. Go ahead.
Three quick points. I'll take my response off the air. One, teachers should have the choice whether or not they want to. They've signed on to protect, encourage, educate our children to begin with. That should be a choice. Second, as a former caller said, professional security, there's thousands of ex-military trained, ready to go, and I'm sure they would love the job. And third, as far as the gun control debate, after Pearl Harbor, the Japanese generals stopped. They didn't attack the mainland because they were afraid of every man, woman, and child having a gun in the United States. That is one heck of a deterrent for anybody that is out for any ill will against the United States.
Dave, thank you very much for the call. Lois Beckett, jump back in here. You see two very different sides of the argument. How do you see this moving forward? I know you have to leave us, but I wanted to get your last word here.
So the most important thing to realize here is that this whole debate over arming schools and making sure that students are not being shot in schools, it ignores something that's very important. And that's the fact that 97 to 99% of the American children who are being murdered each year are being murdered outside of school. Dewey Cornell, who's a school safety expert who's been working on this for many years, says the way we treat this issue is as if there's a flood over the entire country and we've decided to surround the schools with sandbags. And, you know, there's a flood of gun violence in America. 700 children are murdered with guns each year. 500 children die of gun suicides. Another 80 die in gun accidents. If you look at where children are most likely to be murdered, it's not in school. If you look at kids under 12, a third of them die in incidents related to intimate partner violence, according to the best data we have. So the people who are putting kids most at risk aren't these gunmen storming into schools. It's their own parents, their own fathers or mothers' boyfriends. And so it's so hard because schools are so emotionally resonant to us. We care about them so much, and we spend huge amounts of money and effort thinking, how do we make sure that kids are safe in school? And then we let them go back to their homes and their neighborhoods, and that's where they're being killed. So if we want to talk about what does it take to keep America's children safe, it doesn't matter if teachers in schools are armed with guns or not, because that's not where students are most in danger.
Lois Beckett from The Guardian, I really appreciate your time today. Lois, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Kevin Dyes, jump back in here. You heard what Lois just said. You also heard from Bill in Akron, Ohio, who worries about training, thinks that, you know, I'm not sure I'd be equipped. I'm not sure I'd be ready to use a weapon.
No, obviously, and I appreciate the comments from Lois and Susan in particular, and I agree with both of them. This is not a political statement by Holiday ISD. And it's not any statement on how we've gotten here. The problem is that we're here, and I think from a board perspective, it was a pragmatic approach to add another layer of security to a very complex problem. And absolutely, one of the things that our personnel who carry have to go through a psychological profile, mm-hmm. and they do have to receive training. There's, you know, the training is outlined in our standard operating procedure on that, and so. I feel comfortable with the people that we have, and there again, does anyone who carries on a campus believe that they're going to be a savior? That's the end all be all to stopping school violence. And the answer is no. I think it's more this idea of it. If something ever happened and that you're at the end of it, looking back, one of the questions is going to be, did you do everything you could to ensure that your students were safe?
And yet I hear that, Kevin, and then I think in the case of Parkland, would a handgun have been able to compete with a semi-automatic weapon? Hardly seems like a fair fight.
No, absolutely, and I would not disagree with you. However, we don't know the answer to that question. And it's almost the same question of, is teachers armed in schools a deterrent? Well, we don't know of anyone who's ever gone to a place where they were. And there was a great program back in 2002 that was Cops in Schools Grants. And I was at a small rural school, and we wrote for that grant and received it. We were able to get a uniformed, armed policeman on campus. And it was, to us, it was wonderful because we had someone there who was fully trained, who was fully licensed, who could handle our safety and security program for the district. They did Safe and Drug-Free. They did DARE. They developed relationship mm-hmm, with kids mm-hmm. in the community. And to me, that was the best situation. But it's expensive. And one of the things is Holiday ISD is not necessarily a wealthy district.
So yours really in Texas, yeah.
Yeah, and so the board would have probably loved to have, you know, maybe hired people or something like that, but that's not an option just in terms of funding. Mm-hmm. You know, we did the best we could with the resources that we have. And there again, not making any sort of a statement, just looking at the world and going, man, there's a lot of guns out there. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people who are legally carrying guns. And does that present a threat to our students and our staff?
Yeah.
And the answer is yes. So what are you going to do about it?
And so, Suzanne Cohen, I guess I wonder when it comes to this debate, Kevin Dyes, you know, makes reference to his part of the world as sort of a Mayberry kind of a place. I wonder if what works in rural Texas may not necessarily work in suburban Miami or up where you are in Oregon.
Well, you know, every school district needs to decide what measures it wants to put in place to keep our students safe. But I think as a nation and as a society, we have to question why we've normalized mass shootings. Why are we, the adults, accepting this as normal and then wondering what precautions can we take when the fact is it's not normal? It wasn't when I was a student in high school, and I blame myself for that very first time we practiced that drill, thinking that drills such as that is normal. Mass shootings don't have to be normal. That's what the students of Stoneman Douglas are asking us adults to really reflect upon. How can we keep from living in fear of these? And what is the real solution to that? And that's where I come back to gun control, assault rifles, background checks, safety checks. There are things that we can do that will really keep us all safe and really stop this idea that we have to live in a world where being prepared and hiding is the norm.
Let me get another caller here from Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, Najia, you're on the air.
Hello, Jane. Thanks for having me on the air.
Yes. Please go ahead.
Okay, I just wanted to say my opinion about this giving guns to teachers. When I heard that, I thought that it sounds like you're trying to fix the problem of shootings by throwing more guns at that issue, just throwing guns at guns to fix the problem of guns. I think there's more to it. I think we should definitely, and it seems like a knee-jerk reaction, oh, just give the teachers guns and then that'll solve the problem. Then you're putting more guns into the school. Then students who may not have had access to guns can then get guns from their teachers at school. They could take them if they wanted to. They would be on the campus. On the school grounds.
Potentially more dangerous, more chaos, what I hear you saying, Najia. Thank you very much for the call from Nashville. Let's go to Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Paul, you're on. Welcome.
Hi, Jane. The caller before, I think, made a great point. She mentioned that there would be more guns, and I think we have to engage with this proposal, even though the NRA and the gun lobby are making it, I think, in bad faith. They stand to profit from the sales of additional guns, and the superintendent from Texas mentioned that he wants to do everything he can to protect his students. He doesn't want to wonder if he could have done more, but actually, putting more guns into schools puts students at risk. Insurance actuaries actually raise your rates if you have a gun in your home rather than lower them because they know that more guns make it more likely that people will be hurt.
Paul, thank you. Kevin Dyes, do more guns in your district put your students at risk?
I don't believe so. I believe that it was a very thoughtful process that our board actually did back in 2013. And obviously there was a lot of research in terms of insurance and all those sort of things. And that was a concern of the board, right? Anything that increased costs. And so it did not increase our insurance rates or anything like that. And let me say again, you know, it's not a political statement. This is a pragmatic approach looking at the world. I would love to see a world where that was like when I went to school where we didn't have to worry about things like this. And unfortunately, the genie's been let out of the bottle, and I think it will take a long time to unwind it. I'm hopeful, personally, that one day we won't have to talk about this or do this. And I totally agree with the callers that have some angst about it. But we feel very comfortable with the people we have that do conceal carry on campus.
And it's working for you in Texas. Let me get one more call in here. Linda in Boston. Hi, Linda. You're on the air.
Hi. Hi, I'll just make it quick. I'm a retired teacher, semi-retired. My husband's a teacher. Teachers all over my family. And I think this idea is insane. I taught in an urban district, and that's just my husband. And there's just too much risk, too much risk. Theft of the gun. Fire drills are insane anyway. You know, it's ridiculous, and that's all I have to say.
Linda, thank you. I do appreciate your call there from Boston. Suzanne Cohen, wrap us up here. What are you doing differently in your school district since Sandy Hook, since Parkland, since, you know, the flood of mass shootings? How do you view this differently now?
I think of course, we're looking at our safety procedures. Of course, we're advocating for mental health and counseling. But the difference is that I want to advocate for gun control through our union at the state level and at the national level in partnership with our superintendent and our school board members. We really need to be looking at a comprehensive solution that keeps us all safe. So we are looking for safe and supportive ways to take action on March 14th at 10 a.m. with the national movement. We'll do 17 minutes in support of the Stoneman Douglas students. We'll be mobilizing on March 24th. And we plan on continuing with the students of Stoneman Douglas. We stand with them.
Suzanne Cohen, president of the Portland Association of Teachers in Oregon and a 1994 graduate of Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. Suzanne, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Kevin Dyes, superintendent of the Holiday Independent School District in North Texas. Kevin, we appreciate your perspective. Thanks for being here.
You bet. Thank you, Jane.
After the break, we'll talk with two students from Parkland, Florida, as they prepare to return to classes this week. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Before we get back to the show, we'd like to ask you about you. That's right. We want to learn more about our listeners with a short survey. It's anonymous and easy. Just go to wbur.org/survey to complete the survey right now. That's wbur.org/survey. This survey will be tremendously helpful to us. So thanks.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. At a gun control rally in Fort Lauderdale, Florida on February 17th, Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School senior Emma Gonzalez delivered a powerful and passionate appeal on behalf of her fellow students and survivors.
They say that tougher gun laws do not decrease gun violence. We call BS! They say a good guy with a gun stops a bad guy with a gun. We call BS! They say guns are just tools like knives and are as dangerous as cars. We call BS! No, they say that no laws could have been able to prevent the hundreds of senseless tragedies that have occurred. We call BS! That us kids don't know what we're talking about, that we're too young to understand how the government works. We call BS!
Two students who survived the shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School are with us now. Listeners, what do you say to these students as they head back to school this week? What do you think of their activism? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from New York City, David Hogg, a 17-year-old senior at Stoneman Douglas. While in hiding from the shooter, he recorded interviews with his classmates. David, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. How are you doing?
Well, I'm okay. Let me get Parkland, Florida, Michelle's Lapidote here. She's a 15-year-old freshman. Michelle, you're with us, and we appreciate it. Welcome to you.
Hi, Jane. Thank you.
David, we've been talking about President Trump's proposal to arm school teachers in this country. He mentioned it several times last week. The NRA's Wayne LaPierre also talked about it, talking about we must harden our schools. What do you think about this idea that we've been talking about this hour?
Honestly, I don't think it's a great idea. Personally, I don't think it's a good idea at all, considering the fact that there were so many people that should have stepped in that were armed, trained police officers that didn't. How can we expect our teachers to do the same thing? And the other thing that this brings up is, what if a teacher was taken out and a teacher and a student picked up the gun and tried defending her himself? How do we know that that student isn't going to be misidentified as another school shooter or as the school shooter? We won't. And what many people will say is that we need IDs for that. No, we don't. You have, these are split-second decisions to either pull the trigger and save your own life or take somebody else's.
And so, Michelle, would an armed teacher have made a difference to your mind in that horrific shooting at Parkland that you survived?
Absolutely not. My teacher was actually almost as scared of us as us, but I was lucky that she knew what she was doing. But in other cases, if teachers had had guns, it's just a matter of, like, during the day, normally a student could somehow get it, or like, teachers sign up to teach, and that's it. They're not signing up to go and protect us and fight like they do in the military. They're supposed to teach. Our security guard should have stepped in, but he didn't, because he didn't feel comfortable even with his armed weapon.
David Hogg, it's been 12 days since this horrific shooting at your high school. How are you doing? How are you handling all this to this point?
I'm just trying as best as I can to continue on and pass on the message. That's really, really what I'm trying to do here, is not divide us. I'm trying to make us come together as Americans, not separate us.
And what is your message, David? What do you want people to know?
I want people to know that change is coming, and you can either be on the right side or the wrong side of history. But if the past is any given as to what the right side of history is, it's the side that agrees with people and the side that makes people come together and learns to love each other, not the side that hates.
So, Michelle, David says change is coming. What change exactly do you want to see? Do you and your fellow students want to see?
We want to see gun control. We want to see security that is willing to protect us. We want to see better construction that won't be able to get shot through. We just want to make sure that we're being better taken care of rather than just acting as sitting ducks in a school.
During a town hall meeting on CNN last week, Florida Senator Marco Rubio said he was reconsidering supporting a ban on high-capacity ammunition magazines.
It's not the loopholes. It's the problem that once you start looking at how easy it is to get around it, you would literally have to ban every semi-automatic rifle that's sold in America. Fair enough. That is a valid position to hold. But my colleagues do not support banning every semi-automatic rifle sold in America.
David Hogg, tell me what you heard in that exchange. It felt to me like the political ground on the gun debate was shifting right under Rubio's feet as he was speaking and hearing the reaction from the crowd.
Well, absolutely, and I've been saying this a lot. It's almost like Marco Rubio's a professional dancer because he's amazing at sidestepping questions. If you notice, when we asked him about the NRA and whether or not he would take donations, those 3,000-plus students that were there from my school, along with so many parents and different supporters, he would not give us a simple yes or no answer, even though we asked him multiple times, will you take donations from the NRA? He said he will continue to take donations from the NRA, but he said it in like a five-sentence answer, and one in an effort to distract the American public.
Michelle, talk about some of Rubio and some of the other legislators, what they've been talking about as far as creating gun violence restraining orders. Is this a good idea to you? Is it enough? What do you hear in those sorts of proposals?
I mean, I don't think that they're going to do it just because they're all receiving so much money and backing from the NRA. But I know he did support, well, Rubio at least, he did support raising the age limit. But as far as I know, and as far as it seems, it really does not seem like they're going to be doing anything as of now until we keep making more noise.
David, I just want to take you back a little bit to the shooting itself, because I read that you, during the shooting, were actually interviewing your fellow students as you were hiding.
Yep.
Tell me what that was like, what you did, what you talked to your fellow students about.
It was absolutely horrifying to have to interview my friends, but I knew that if I died there and our souls were left behind spattered across the classroom in our own blood, hopefully some of these congressmen would see essentially the writing on the wall, you know, like look back at history and realize what's really happened here and realize maybe if we died, hopefully our voices, if unlike our souls, would carry on and hopefully echo through the halls of Congress and across the nation, because certainly our voices, had we not just spoken up, would never be heard.
What were the students saying to you?
They were saying essentially that they can't believe that politicians like Marco Rubio, Governor Rick Scott, and various other people have continued to allow this to happen, are continued to be supported by the NRA. And the fact that no action has been taken to prevent exactly what was happening there is absolutely horrifying. There was even one, there was a junior NRA member that I was interviewing that was supposed to go out and shoot guns the next day for their birthday. And they completely changed their position. Their name was Alex Yu, and they acknowledged how horrifying this was and how they didn't want to ever really touch a gun again. Like, and that's what we're starting to see in this country. We're starting to see an approval rating for universal background checks get higher. We're starting to see levels of public support for gun control and gun safety higher than they've ever been since 1993. I mean, change is here, and it's coming.
Let me get Marlene in here, a caller from Tampa, Florida. Hi, Marlene. You're on the air with David Hogg and Michelle Lapidot.
Hi, Jane. So I'm a child psychologist, and I am super impressed by how these kids are speaking up and handling all this. You had asked what you might say to them or what advice you might give them. My concern is that they also are taking care of themselves and taking time out for self-care. You know, what they're dealing with in the public sphere would be overwhelming for anybody, but on top of experiencing recent trauma, it just seems, I'm just hoping that they're carving out some time to just relax and do fun kid stuff, because you know, they've been through a lot.
Marlene, thank you. Indeed, they have. David Hogg, many Parkland students marched to the Florida State Capitol in Tallahassee. You've been doing a lot of media and things. How do you see yourself mobilizing in the weeks and months to come?
Just constantly getting on Twitter, working during midterms after the march, working up till the march to make sure everybody's out there, and making sure that these people that are supported by the NRA, like Marco Rubio and Governor Rick Scott, can never get elected ever again. Because if they do, they're going to continue pushing this pro-gun agenda that, in a sense, is good because they're helping protect Second Amendment rights, but is bad because they refuse to acknowledge the other side because they only get funding. They only get funding from the NRA. For example, Marco Rubio, he has gotten over $3.3 million from the NRA. That's over $176,000 for each one of my 17 fellow classmates and teachers that were slaughtered at my school. How can we continue to elect him? How can we elect somebody like Rick Scott that's supported by the NRA and refuses to take action? You can see he's implementing these policies a year from now in an effort to get elected for the United States Senate to take Bill Nelson, the Florida senator's seat. That's what he's trying to do, and it's disgusting. He could definitely do this stuff faster. It's just because he wants to see his election for Senate.
What about inaction so far in the Florida legislature? I know Florida Governor Rick Scott is calling for raising the minimum age to buy firearms. There hasn't been a lot of action, frankly, by your state lawmakers on this point. Are you satisfied? What more needs to be done?
I'm not satisfied. I will never be satisfied until every single person that is supported by the NRA or the gun lobby or any lobby that promotes the endangerment of the American public and our democracy, until those elected officials are out of office, I will never feel justified. And the people, for example, we were only able to meet with one Republican lawmaker. We were supposed to have a day full of constant meetings, and person after person at the Florida legislature in Florida canceled on us. And that's because they want people in Florida to forget. This session's almost over, and they just want to get reelected with NRA backing. That's what they want. They want us to forget, and we're not going to let that happen.
Vanessa writes via email to us, I just want to thank you for having these brave students on today, and thank you from the bottom of my heart to these students and to all the young people who are standing up against a system that is long overdue for change. Thank you for being the bright and intelligent voices of our nation so desperately in need right now. We are behind you. Let's get Dennis in here from Sandy Hook, Connecticut. Hi, Dennis. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. How are you?
Well, thank you. Go ahead.
You know, after what happened, you know, so horrifically in our school system here.
Right there in Sandy Hook,
you know, it took a while to put piece together how to arrange security, but, you know, we have a system in place right now that does not arm teachers and should not arm teachers. It's impossible to get into the schools without confronting at least one armed security person who is an ex-police officer and an unarmed person who is constantly making rounds. You know, we have the local police doing their rounds, driving through parking lots.
Mm-hmm.
It's all non-intrusive. And I take umbrage with what Trump said about the security guards not knowing the kids, not loving the kids. I don't know if you read that quote at all.
Mm-hmm.
But these security guards know every child by name, high five, hugs. They know the parents, they know the teachers, and it is all done with vigilance and love. It's incredible what happened in our community.
Dennis, thank you very much for the call. Michelle Lapidot, jump back in here. I know classes are set to begin at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School this week. Are you ready to go back, Michelle?
I'm still in shock about the whole thing. Like, I don't really feel like it happened. I feel like it was a terrible movie. I went to sleep and I woke up and I just remember clips of it throughout my day. But they're easing us back into it slowly. I'm personally ready to go back, but I feel like I need to talk about it with a lot of people there for like the first week until I start resuming my workload and my classes.
The building where the shooting happened, of course, is shut down. And some of the students, as I have seen, went back yesterday to sort of walk around. What do you think will go through your mind, Michelle, as you walk through the doors of Stoneman Douglas?
I actually went yesterday, and I was in the freshman building.
Mm.
But I wanted to go back into the freshman building because I feel like it's opened a loop of my life, and that when I go back, it'll be closed and everything will hit me. And I mean, I don't want to say that'll be it, but emotionally, like, I'll feel something. But as I was walking through the high school, it was really nice to see police there and to see security and to see how seriously everyone was taking it now. And I guess it's, well, they realized because it's not a joke.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to feel safer. I'm just going to feel closer with my peers.
David Hogg, you have been accused of being a, quote, crisis actor since this shooting, and I wonder if you'd respond to that.
Yeah, totally. To those people that have been saying this stuff, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry to you that you've lost enough faith in America to believe that we would have actors out here doing this type of thing. I'm not an actor now. I'm an activist. I've never... It's just unfathomable that I even have to answer that question, but I understand. And to those people that are calling me out, I want to thank them. They've done a great job of advertising. They promoted our campaign, kept us in the mass media, and they're still doing a great job of it. So honestly, thank you to them. One thing I want to point out, though, going back to the school, is the fact that they're replacing all the glass in our school with non-bulletproof glass, and they aren't replacing any of the locks to make them lockable from the inside. How can we do that and allow this to basically happen again? I know we're going to have more security, but that's not forever. And I know it's going to cost a lot. I'm sure there are people that can help us get started out with this in terms of funding if we needed more bulletproof glass or anything. Mm-hmm. But because of economies of scale, the price will eventually go down more and more as there's a huge demand for it. And if every school across America had bulletproof glass, we could probably save thousands of lives and promote American job growth at the same time.
So I just have about 30 seconds here. After Sandy Hook, after Las Vegas, after now Parkland, what do you want people to know, David Hogg? You get the last word.
Honestly, just get out, take action, and never forget about this. Never forget about these 17 individuals, and never, ever don't vote.
David Hogg, 17-year-old senior from Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, survived the slaughter 12 days ago. David, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Jane.
Michelle Lapidot, 15-year-old freshman there in Parkland, Florida. Michelle, thanks to you. Good luck.
Thank you so much.
Continue the conversation, listeners. Get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Coming up tomorrow, the UN has demanded a ceasefire in Syria. The fighting has not ceased. We'll check in on that war that will not stop. Until then, I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point.